how do I affect change? How mm-hmm. do I begin to define my world mm-hmm. and not be defined by the world? And that's what started, and I've been doing that now for 50 years.
Hi, I'm Tori Reid, the CEO of Victory & Noble, as well as the executive producer for Getting Deals Done. Getting Deals Done is about one of three dynamic intentions. Number one, the success mindset, which is about the visionary doer as well as the dream catcher. Number two, systems, what it takes to get deals done in the world. And number three, power, how big things are done in the world. Getting Deals Done is about impacting humanity one deal at a time. Our shows are produced for the busy executive in under 20 minutes with voiceovers that aim to clarify, inspire, and raise your collective business IQ. We hope the show will leave you supercharged with capital energy, focused with purpose, and ready to do your very best by being your best. Welcome to Getting Deals Done with Patrick Howell, my partner and a tenured financier, as well as someone who knows a thing or two about getting the deal done. Courtesy of our partners at Vivro Water, a sustainable solutions company that mirrors our commitment to clarity, focus, and a better world. Vivro's water solutions for business have already helped divert tens of millions of wasteful plastic bottles from landfills and waterways. Every day, Vivro systems across the globe help forward-thinking companies transform their own on-premise water into a source for pure and reliable filtered hydration. Let Vivro help you and your business leave a legacy of stewardship, health, and wellness that will literally make you feel good inside. Go to vivrowater.com, VIVREAU water.com, for more information.
What a great opportunity to sit here today. We've got Tim Reid. We've got a sister show to Heirs to Life with Tori Reid called Getting Deals Done. It's, the moniker on it, or the subtitling on the show, is Doing Business, Changing Power, Changing Systems, and Making the World a Better Place, One Deal at a Time. Mm-hmm. And typically what we like to deal with that we haven't had that much of thus far are people that have been innovative at a very large level, systemically, with inside of societies. So we've had moguls, we've had billionaire real estate mavens, we've had satellite communications companies that are doing stuff over Nigeria, Africa, Australia, worth billions of dollars. But what we haven't really had, and is the core of our show, are people that know how to stand up to systems and make changes that are long-lasting and everlasting. So I brought a quote. It says, "Storytelling is the most fundamental technology of civilizations. Indian filmmaker Shikhar Kapoor has said the story is our map for all of us. We are the stories that we tell ourselves. In this universe, in this existence, where we live with the duality of whether we exist or not and who we are, the stories we tell ourselves are the stories that define the potentialities of our existence." And so on that note, I recognize you as a master storyteller. Through and through. And when I think of you, I don't think of you in the way the cosmology of American society would think of you. I think of you going back 5,000 years, and I think of our traditions with the Yoruba and Igbo tribes, and I think of you deriving yourself from that and mastering that in the current day. But before we delve into that, I want to find out a little bit more about what is your driving force? What is the through line for Tim Reid from 1974, when you began your career in television and film, to Legacy of a People in 2021?
Yes, storytelling was my claim to fame, and it started when I was very young, when my grandmother and my rest of members of my family designated I was the one to tell what happened at choir rehearsal, what happened at school, what happened in anything that I was involved in, or if I went to a family situation. And it's a tradition that was handed down for generations upon generations upon generations for millennia, and that is people of the African diaspora are in their DNA. We perform. We just don't tell stories the way the rest of the world tells stories. For instance, Italians, they innately, they speak with their hand. You know, it's a very hand-oriented culture. And Black people are performers of story. I mean, we use our voice, inflection, we use our body movements, we use our eyes, we use every part of our being as the possibility of defining the moment, you know. And because of that, as it is handed down within a clan, someone is that storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chosen. And I had no idea what it meant. I know that I performed it, but I had no idea what it meant. And then when I got into show business, I had an epiphany. I went, much of what we know about ourselves, much of what we're told, comes through the art of storytelling, or what we call in the modern era, propaganda. And so I was incited to want to be a part of that. And when I got into Hollywood in the early or late 70s, I noticed that the people who controlled the impression of me were people out here and in New York.
I love to call it the Hollywood Industrial Complex.
Yeah. And I went, I got to be a part of that, but I just can't be a part of it and perform in front of it. I got to get behind and begin to define the kinds of stories, the kinds of images, and the kind of roles that I wanted to play because they weren't offered to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was turned down by other people who were casting roots because I wasn't, quote, black enough. I didn't have the visual interpretation of blackness in America because they only saw us in one sort mm-hmm. of look, one sort of dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothered me. The piece didn't bother me, but just the being able to be considered not black enough, and I've been black most of my life. So I then began to say, okay, how do I affect change? How mm-hmm. do I begin to define my world
mm-hmm.
and not be defined by the world? And that's what started, and I've been doing that now for 50 years.
I think that one of your crowning achievements, I mean, you were recognized for nearly 30 years, WKRP, Simon & Simon, and at a certain time point in 1997, you said, I'm going to start up New Millennium Studios,
mm-hmm.
which I think has been the inspiration for the people that are the power brokers of now. I think that folks like Tyler Perry and his Atlanta studio system picked up direct spiritual inspiration.
Well, he came to my studio. He hung out yes. there for a small moment.
And he saw what he could do.
He saw what was possible, although I didn't make mine successful. I wasn't able to follow the pattern in a way that I could enact the kind of change that was needed. In other words, I couldn't convince the powers that be in Virginia, the politicians, the people at government who has to support something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Incentives and laws have to be changed, labor rules, all that stuff, you know, mm-hmm. union activity, everything has to be altered. And I couldn't do that, even though one of my dearest friends and early angel investors was then became governor. He was shocked at the Mark Warner, Senator Mark Warner now, of course. And we sat and talked about this. He said, I'm amazed at the resistance, you know, that you are getting and that we're getting trying to create a idea factory, right? To create the kinds of things that I know you want to do and I want to see you accomplish them. That's why I'm part of this. He was surprised. And I wasn't surprised, but I thought I could pull it off.
Yes.
And I couldn't. And Tyler did. And I applaud what he's able to accomplish or what he did accomplish. But he was able to also to get the government or the timing. Sometimes timing is about has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. It's not luck. It's just timing. And I think at the time that he made his move and very successfully, the state of Georgia was like, we need some money here because we're mm-hmm. going down. And mm-hmm. now they have realized that they have created a $2 or $3 billion industry. It is one of the most powerful economic forces in that state. It's changed the state.
How do you deal with that sensation, that feeling of failure to go on and create other successes as you have with Legacy of People?
Well, first of all, you become pissed off
mm-hmm.
and you let that anger make a decision for yourself. Mm-hmm. Do I let that anger defeat me or do I let that anger inspire me?
Yes.
Do I take a pause? One of the things I realize is that being on point, being the first in something is is rarely the thing that anyone should attempt to do,
mm-hmm.
being the first of anything, because the resistance is full force and you have no buffers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also going to take a lot of arrows in the back from mm-hmm. your own team out of fear, out of cowardness, out of becoming, you know, that Judas complex that many people get in our business, where they think they will progress faster by taking out the enemy of the people. So once you survive all of that, you look back and you say, was it a failure? It failed in a sense on a business level, But on a personal level, it was one of the most powerful things that I've ever done.
Yes,
because I defied the system and I survived. I didn't go broke. I certainly didn't make the kind of money I dreamed of making, but I didn't go broke, you know.
I mean, you're an anomaly. I was telling you just in the conversation that we had yesterday to see somebody of African descent and see them matured and gracefully filled with vim and vigor, charisma, at a stage is something, you know, you don't think about. You think about the Bill Cosbys and you think about just unfortunate circumstances. The same thing with Richard Pryor. Somebody told me, said, Richard Pryor, Tim Reed, Muhammad Ali. I mean, there's greatness in those gentlemen, but there's something to be said about pirouetting and landing at the ginger age of 75 and saying, well, I'm still starting up enterprises. I'm still whole. I'm still beautiful. Yeah. And I'm still doing it. That's amazing.
Well, you know, I don't know what to account for other than the fact that I was raised by a group of survivors. I mean, the people who mentored me were people who survived World War I, who survived the pandemic of 1918, 1919. These were people who lived through the Roaring Twenties, who were hit by the Depression. And, you know, being Black in America, doing any of those things, World War I, what you got was always worse. Your obstacles are always triple, quadruple. So for those people to survive that, even under the conditions of lynching and segregation and hatred, and prosper and build universities and hospitals and create in these little Black communities I grew up in, colored towns, these little small 10, 20 block square areas, out of it came some of the greatest leaders the world has ever known. One of the other things that I wanted to do in the studio, or I'm trying to do in all the business that I get involved in, is to begin to tell our story from our point of view, wherever the story happens to have occurred. And I think we don't give enough respect to a few generations ago. We don't really give enough respect. All we see ourselves are as victims. I was just in Tulsa for the, I wouldn't call it a celebration, the observance of the bombing of Tulsa 100 years ago. And I did the first documentary on Tulsa about 18 years ago. And my documentary, although a lot of people, LeBron's done one, all the networks have done one, when I watch them, the one thing that I find missing is a cultural point of view. Basically, what we see is a story about the massacre of a group of people, a very successful group of people in a very successful community. But we see them even in saying that as victims, victims of the system. And I chose to tell the story of them as someone who fought. You know, the first shot fired that caused a fatality was a Black man killing a white man. That was, and the first battles were decisively won by Black people as they were fighting to leave the courthouse and make it back to the Black community. And they had to fight their way through these white neighbors. Well, they had more guns. These were all World War II veterans. They came back and they had weapons and they had an organization and they understood the need to support one's family and community. And when they got back, they were joined by other Blacks and they formed a force somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 to 100 people to defend the line. And they held the line. The railroad tracks that always seemed to come through the Black neighborhood. Well, they held the line. It wasn't until the white community broke into the army and got a machine gun and put it on the back of a truck. And then they were able to then break the line. But even then, they couldn't go into the community in the ways that they wanted. It wasn't until they broke into the airport, local airport, where they kept the little planes for dusting fields and all that, and put incendiary devices on the plane and bomb from the air, were they able to really take the community. So that fighting part of the Black community, that story wasn't told in the way that I thought it was should have been told. Not that, I mean, you can say, yes, they were defeated, and yes, they were, you know, the community was destroyed. But we also have to talk about our battles that we stood up to.
Is white supremacy the bottom line of Hollywood and how it tells its story?
Well, I think it's the controlling of the narrative. I mean, the narrative has to be for the support and welfare of the system to keep people thinking of themselves as victims. I think the point I want to make is he or she who controls the narrative controls the culture, controls the view of oneself. And for all too long, we have allowed other people to control our narrative. And I'm not necessarily saying that narrative always has to be one of glory and supremacy, but just the narrative. And you have to tell, the side of the story where a people, a strong people who come from the motherland, who were the first people to walk upright, who built several countries, not just their own. There's more to them than being victims. There's more to them than being slaves. There's more to them because there's so much story prior to them. There's so much story after them. And those stories need to be told.
Tim Reed is a master storyteller. In an industry that is as fickle as it is capricious, he has found a way to inspire baby boomers to millennials, decade after decade, with an avant-garde work in front of the camera as well as behind the camera. The body of his work is truly a marvel to behold. And he, like whiskey and wisdom, only gets better and better and better with age. He is widely respected by peers and beloved by fans, and is a warrior who has always maintained a regal veneer. He is also a tough competitor, who I see as the Kobe Bryant of Hollywood, a maverick playing hard, take no prisoners, playing to win, playing hard in the paint, achieving respect wide and far, with an array of dizzying highlights from his own New Millennium Studios, predating Tyler Perry's epic accomplishment in Atlanta, to his Legacy Media Institute, to his forthcoming Legacy of a People streaming network, also known as LGCY-TV. Oscar Michaud would be the Michael Jordan. This is part one of a two-part series. Join us next month when we celebrate the bravado, vision, and accomplishment of the storyteller, impresario, and icon of television. And remember, Black history is world history. Black business and African genius are not only the piston engines, but the framework for global economic power.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Getting Deals Done. Each show is engineered as meditation on success by the same team that has brought you success meditations on the art of life, as well as being your very best self with our flagship program, Here's to Life with Tori Reed.
The Hilton Sacramento Art and West in Sacramento, California is committed to creating a safe and relaxing experience, including delivery of a clean stay from check-in to check-out. Located a couple of exits from downtown Sacramento and California's capital, our hotel provides a world-class stay, amenities, and rooms at the center of the California experience. California is a world-class economy with visionaries, doers, and dream catchers at its heart. Our mission, as with Here's to Life and Getting Deals Done, is the highest possible expression of excellence, business moxie, humanity, and client care. As the world moves at a fast and sometimes hectic pace, we will provide you with a peace of mind. The Hilton Sacramento Art and West is here to make your experience a better one. We look forward to receiving you. I am Ginger Levert, Director of Sales and Marketing at the Hilton Sacramento Art and West. Our focus is on the customer experience and a pristine excellence. When you travel to Sacramento, stay with us and I guarantee your peace of mind.
We look forward to bringing you another dynamic offering globally every 2 weeks. Be sure to join us for our virtual mastermind forum. And remember, prosperity is a state of being, not a ledger line on your bank account.